Hello. Welcome and thank you for joining us and listening to our podcast, The God Beyond the Bible. Our podcast is released weekly each Friday. The content of each episode is based on the questions and curiosities we all have about God and the Bible. Many of our topics are considered taboo in the minds of the mainstream church. You will find our discussions to be, I think, refreshing and often far from traditional. But we don't just skirt around these complex issues, but confront them head on, and not in the way you're used to hearing them discussed on typical Christian talk shows. I'm Alan Rowland, creator and host of The God Beyond the Bible. As of the launch of this podcast, I've been a pastor for more than 35 years. My co-host is my daughter, Trayson, and our engineer, co-producer is my daughter, Tabitha. Our mission is to encourage our audience, along with us, to open our minds to the reality that God is simply too big to be fully explored or experienced by the reading and studying of a single ancient work. In short, the Bible's not the sum of God, and to think this is to limit what He has done, is doing, and what He will do in our future. So with introductions made, thank you for listening, and let's dive into the topic of the day.
All right. Welcome, Seekers, to podcast number 94 of God Beyond the Bible. We encourage you to never stop seeking. Seeking personal spirituality in a deeply religious environment can be difficult with so many voices shouting at us from every direction. You add to the mix that there are just as many voices on the side of seeking, and this can make our journey at times frustrating and confusing. Just remember to always return to your center, and that is that voice inside you that is what inspired you to take the journey in the first place.
And our shout outs this week are to our listeners in Saudi Arabia. We're glad to have you guys on board.
Definitely. You bet. And our quote of the week, most of us experience a life full of wonderful moments and difficult moments. But for many of us, even when we are most joyful, there is fear behind our joy. And Trayson, who said that?
Thich Nhat Hanh.
Okay.
All right. Last episode, we discussed the organized church's modern approach to evangelism and how we've modeled the structure of the organization on a pyramid, and thus our evangelism has taken on the role of recruitment to secure the base of the pyramid, which in return supports the upper tiers and those who occupy those lofty positions.
And this week, we would like to introduce a topic that, quite frankly, may be the most significant area of our life, that if understood and properly addressed, may just serve to release us from a great deal of our mental, emotional, and spiritual stress in our personal lives. And we have decided to title this topic as emotional investment.
Now, when we say emotional investment, we're merely talking about all the things in our lives that we attach emotion to, and therefore find ourselves emotionally exhausted or even emotionally bankrupt. How many of us spend the day lending heartfelt thought and concern to so many people and issues that we are literally exhausted by the end of the day?
I have come to a point in my life where, and I will say this and put this out there, there are days when I see a message from someone or a text or a missed phone call and I have to go.
I can't deal with that right
now.
Not
today.
Can't do that today. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
We all have people we know that when we have to spend any length of time with them, the encounter leaves us emotionally and spiritually exhausted. We call them energy vampires because they literally suck the emotional energy from us, leaving us in a position that often takes us days to recover from, and we need days or weeks to recoup and recharge before we are ready for another draining encounter with that person.
And this is something that I really, because it's something that we have talked about a lot in our family, and I don't think a lot of other people talk about it. Because with my husband, when we were dating, I told him, so one of the reasons that I love you so much is that you don't drain me to be around you. I don't feel exhausted. And he's like, what are you even talking about? And I realized it's because I do have this tendency to invest so much. So the question is, why are those people able to do that over and over again? Or even greater, why do we subject ourselves to this experience over and over again? The answer is because we've made an unwise emotional investment in that relationship. While we think our problem is that person, and in response to that, we try to avoid or limit our exposure to that person, in reality, it's because we've chosen to make an emotional investment in that relationship that has no potential for a return on our investment.
So let's back up and do some groundwork. It is our choice to whom or what we attach our emotions. When we attach emotion to anything or anyone, we have made an investment in that thing or that person. The reason we have chosen the term emotional investment is that this is something we would never do with our finances. If we invested our finances as frivolously and carelessly as we do our emotions, we would expect our money to be exhausted and be financially bankrupt in no time at all.
Okay, it's time for a few examples. Let's begin with the example we first used, and that is people. Most of the people that we invest our emotions in will seldom, if ever, produce a return. In short, if the relationship is one where they are always drawing or taking from us emotionally and never return any emotional encouragement to us, it is a poor emotional investment. We would never knowingly put our money into an investment that never returned a dividend, but instead always demanded more money to be invested, would we?
Well, and it goes even with people. When you have someone who only calls you when they want money, I mean, honestly, guys, yeah. It does not take you long to cut off that relationship and go, no, I'm not doing this. But with our emotions, it's like, well, they're just asking for some of my time.
Yeah.
So, but we are supposed to love everybody, aren't we?
Sure.
Yes.
Yes, of course we are. But can we love without becoming emotionally invested? I mean,
I don't. Yes, but some of us are not there yet.
Well, and the short answer is yes, but we're really getting ahead of ourselves with that question. Let's just close this introduction to the concept of emotional investment with that thought that we have as much control over and should devote as much thought and caution to our emotional investments as we do our financial investments. And let's pause and we'll be back with segment two.
And welcome to part two of episode 94 of God Beyond the Bible. Today's topic is emotional investment. We began by asking, do you find yourself ending your days emotionally exhausted? In this day in which we live, when we say, this has been a tough day, I just need to have a glass of wine or watch an old movie or read a favorite novel or whatever we associate with unwinding at the end of the day. Think about that statement. It usually isn't a physical exhaustion we are suffering from. Actually, physical exhaustion is a good feeling. Compared to this, it is emotional exhaustion that has us in its grasp.
And it's so funny that this podcast has really, it's something for me because this is something I needed. But I tell DJ all the time at night, I'll go, I'm so tired, not sleepy tired. I'm just tired. Mm-hmm. And
it's something that we don't talk about a lot is that emotional exhaustion can start giving you physical symptoms.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
I tell my husband sometimes I feel like I have cotton in my brain.
Yeah.
When I'm emotionally exhausted, it feels like it's just made of cotton and I can't focus or breathe.
Okay, so what do we mean by emotional investment? This involves anyone or anything to which we commit an emotional attachment, which results in an emotional response each time we encounter or think about that thing or person. What really happens is that when we choose to attach emotion to a person or thing, we are invested. Therefore, we want to protect our investment by trying to exert control over that person or thing. When we perceive the person or thing in which we are invested as not using our investment wisely, we suffer emotional stress.
Now, does that make sense?
In other words, yes. If people would just do what I say, yeah. Everything would be much less stressful. Now, when we say that we are emotionally invested in things, what are some examples of things that we may become emotionally invested in?
Well, we talked about in the break before leading up to this, we talked about mine is we have a tree in our front yard.
Yes.
That I can remember. It was home base when we played tag, the swing hung from it. And I'm emotionally invested because it would break my heart if we had to cut that tree down.
And it was originally my grandmother's place.
Yes.
And that tree, that walnut tree was there when she was a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But you've invested in that.
I have.
Well, and let's use a little wider range, glaring example here. It's attaching our emotion to a political movement.
That's an example, yeah.
As we are witnessing right now in American politics, people have made emotional investments in differing political philosophies, which in return has resulted in the natural response. Each side now reacts as though whatever happens is a personal loss or a victory because they've chosen to attach extreme emotion to the platform or the candidate. Therefore, they are really trying to protect their emotional investment, which is prohibiting them from being objective. When I'm emotionally invested in anything, I'm no longer
emotion,
objective.
Emotion blinds us. Emotion yes. does not, we do not serve well right. if we're driven purely by emotion. Concerning any person, thing, or issue, if we must first consult our emotions or think about it, and we probably do this automatically, how do I feel about that? Mm-hmm. We don't ask that because we already know how we feel about it. We cannot make an objective decision concerning that person, thing, or issue. This is true of even the things we have judged as bad, things we think are wrong. And every time the topic of one of these issues comes up, there is an emotional response, which draws on us emotionally, spiritually, and mentally. We even call many of these things emotionally charged issues. And every time that issue comes up, it costs us something as we try to protect our investment.
And, you know, I call them that, but I've never really thought about how my emotion plays into So we unconsciously choose to make emotional investments hundreds, if not thousands of times each day. We also encounter things that we've previously made an emotional investment on hundreds of times per day, drawing on our limited and strained emotional supply. For example, our driving. We attach emotion to every move every other driver makes.
Because I'm the only smart one.
We have attached emotion to the driving experience, therefore we must critique everyone on the road. Then we attach that emotion to the other driver. We think, mumble, or sometimes even shout out loud, "Idiot! Moron! How did you ever get a license?" And we are in a state of constant emotional uproar, and we haven't even faced the challenges of our day yet.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
And driving can exhaust me, and I think that's a lot of the reason why is because I'm always...
Yeah, but maybe this will help you. Maybe you need to start limiting your emotional investment.
Yes. So in short, anything that produces an emotional response to us, we're emotionally invested in. This happens hundreds or even thousands of times every day. And we end the day emotionally bankrupt. Almost all of these people, things, and issues that we respond to emotionally are giving us no return on our investment. They're only drawing on our emotional supply. And for the most part, we unconsciously chose to make an emotional attachment and investment in these poor emotional investments.
So it's all my fault.
It's your fault.
Another area which exhausts us emotionally is social media. Yeah. Everything we see or read prompts a personal emotional response, thus expanding our emotional portfolio, broadening our emotional investment to the brink of bankruptcy. We do this without any thought to the price to be paid. Everything we encounter during the day is geared towards getting us to make an emotional attachment or commitment, thus requiring an emotional response. Every emotional response costs us something and seldom returns anything.
And social media is absolutely a breeding ground for emotional vampires.
Well, yeah.
They can reach more people quicker and recharge their own batteries by draining yours. By simply making a post or sending a message, or it's very easy.
I mean, let's just go ahead and say it. The pictures of a person missing their leg or a girl or something that's missing an arm, and no one will like me or share this because I'm ugly because of my face. Now, think about that, what that's doing to you. Think of what that is. Think of the price of that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How much does that cost you? Well, if you do like I do, when I see those things, first of all, I know that the biggest part of those are generated by people trying to make money off the Facebook.
Yeah,
and
right.
The more likes and shares you get, you got to understand that. But a lot of people don't. A lot of people just pour emotion over that and will fall like, or if, let me see. If you deny me, a picture of Jesus. If you deny me, I'll deny you. And so repost and punch amen or what, you know.
Yeah.
Think of that for a moment. Think of what is happening there. You are getting emotionally bushwhacked.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite ones that went around for a while was a rebuttal to that of Jesus sitting there at the pearly gates, and he had an iPad in his hand, and he goes, "You didn't like my post. I'm sorry."
Okay. Well, what about television ads?
What about them in the news too?
Yeah. Especially those wanting us to pledge financial support to any one of the thousands of causes always begin with trying to get us to make an emotional attachment to their cause. They show us images of suffering and injustice to spark an emotional response, which can easily be transitioned into a financial response. We aren't implying that these aren't genuine needs, but we don't consider the emotional toll this has on us personally. Anything that triggers an emotional response in us means that we are emotionally invested, and no matter how small a thing it may be, it does cost us.
And I bet there is a song I could play for you guys out there that would absolutely positively bring to mind one of these commercials. So if you can't think of what we're talking about, sit there for a second. You'll figure it out. I mean, is stress not directly associated with our emotions? We stress over people and things that we're emotionally invested in and think that they're not living up to our investment. So we stress about how we can change something or someone so we can feel better about our investment. One might see how quickly this can result in an emotional overload, or in investment terms, being emotionally overdrawn. And we all know that this type of stress leads to all kinds of physical, emotional, spiritual, and mental complications and suffering. Mm-hmm. So with that, we're going to go ahead and pause, and we'll be back with segment three.
And here we are already at part three of episode 94 of God Beyond the Bible. Now today we're talking about the things we unnecessarily attach emotion to. And thus we are emotionally invested in that person or thing. Now we're not suggesting absolute emotional detachment from the world in which we live. We're talking about managing. That's what we're talking about today. Managing our emotional investments with the same dedication and attention to potential return as we do with our finances. Now, that sounds bad. Well, you just want something because you're going to get something back. We're just talking about unnecessarily invested. That makes your emotional investment makes no difference whatsoever to that situation.
Except it hurts you.
Except you pay something. It costs you.
So a good place to start is to begin paying attention to things that trigger an emotional response in us. It's not a matter of loving or caring. We asked earlier if it is possible to love without becoming emotionally invested. And our answer is yes. When we commit benevolent acts of love and charity, we know that there is emotion involved. But the difference should be that in these acts of benevolence, we are giving that emotion away with no expectation of return. This is really what unconditional love is, acting out of love that is not contingent on the effectiveness or the possibility of a return on our actions.
And I like to call that emotional charity.
Yes.
We can make anything. Think about this. Let's put it in these, and this might help you, Tabitha. Am I going to commit an act of emotional charity, or am I going to make an investment, investment? There's a difference.
Right.
Acts of charity, financially speaking, that money's gone. Think about it no more. I contributed. I did something I felt like I ought to do, and that's done. And I don't go around and chase that money to see where my money went to that charity. If I invest in something, I'm investing because of the return. If I make a financial investment in something, I'm going to follow it. I'm going to chase it through. I'm going to see it to the end because I'm going to see. It's like investing in the stock market. Let's put it this way. You have those days this market is up. Oh, boy, you feel great. Good. 3 days later, half your money's gone.
Yes.
How did that? See, but it's the same way. But if I give that money away, if I'm not investing that money, if I'm just giving that money away, it's gone. I know it's gone.
Right.
Here's a funny story. Did you guys ever hear of the ARC movement? That's what it was called, the ARK graffiti movement was actually what it was called, which was acts of random kindness graffiti. But what you would do is you would carry a pack of post-it notes with you and a Sharpie. And you would randomly, when you were somewhere, write a kind message to someone and stick it on a mirror or a bathroom stall door or whatever, right, where somebody would find it. And it was just supposed to make someone's day a little bit brighter. But there were other things that you could do. One of the big ones was you would take a $5 bill and stick it inside of a Redbox movie that you borrowed and put it back in the machine so that the next person who rents that movie gets their, you know, they get this $5 bill and they can go buy snacks. You drop a $20 bill into a box of diapers, and that way someone who really needs it might get it or whatever. But the funny thing with this is it became, I was having a conversation with a girl and I was like, this is something I love. You know, I love everything about this. And she's like, but how do you know that the person getting that box of diapers really needs that $20?
Because you make an emotional attachment. See, you've invested in, you're making an investment. You're not making a gift. Yes. You're making an investment if you're just wanting, if you have to stick around Redbox to see
who gets that movie next.
Is it me on three or who is it? It's Trayson on three?
Is it me on three?
I don't know.
All right. So in fact, it is only the love that comes with an emotional attachment that is in limited supply. Unconditional love without emotional attachment costs us nothing. But acts of love that come with our emotional attachment come at a price. Perhaps we could say it this way. Let's suppose that we drive down the road and randomly throw cash out the window of our car.
I do that all the time, yes.
Yeah, me too. We know that cash has the potential to be found by someone and used, or maybe it'll never be found and deteriorate back into the elements. If we throw it out and go on, we've acted without emotional attachment.
However, Tabitha, if we toss the cash out of the window with the intention of only people who need or deserve it in mind, we have attached an emotion to the act. Then we find ourselves looking each time we drive that part of the road to see if the money's been found. If it's gone, as it likely will be if it's in the sight of drivers and pedestrians, we then begin to obsess over who found the money and what they used it for. We've turned it into an emotional investment, seeking an emotional return, that is, the satisfaction that the money was found, and hoping to hear how it saved the day for someone financially destitute.
Okay, and we get deeply emotionally invested in grudges. We often attach deep emotion and resentment to those that we feel have disrespected us or neglected to acknowledge us. That person may not even be aware that they have offended us, which, you know, often offends us even more because how can they be so inconsiderate and not know? So where did we make the choice to make an emotional investment in this situation? It was at the moment of the offense. Mm-hmm. We reacted with an emotional response. We were offended. So now we are emotionally invested, and this emotional investment has no potential to ever produce a positive return on our investment. But quite the opposite. It will cost us by making a negative draw on our emotional account every time that we see that person or are otherwise reminded of the event. And I do want to say something here because they're picking on me because we had like a 30-minute conversation before this podcast. We're making this seem like a really easy concept.
No, it's not.
And it's not. And we're all at different places. And I was telling them this was a hard podcast for me because at this point in my journey, I cannot separate emotional investment and love. Yeah. And I'm working on it. And we're going to talk about why it's such a struggle for me. But I just want everyone to know we're not making this a cut and dried, easy to do thing.
No, I don't want it to sound like I'm going to be like Paul wrote. I'm not speaking as though I have obtained. I have not obtained.
Right. I understand the concept. I'm just not there yet. Yeah. So how do we make wise emotional investments that produce an emotional return like peace of mind?
Well, first of all, as we've said many times, we have no control over people and circumstances. However, we have absolute control over how we react to people and circumstances. I can decide if I want to invest my precious mental and emotional energy in this situation.
As Mama always said, choose your battles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So secondly, will my emotional investment bring about a return? In other words, will my devotion of emotional energy have any lasting positive effect on the person, cause, or philosophy I am attaching myself to?
Ooh, that's a hard one. And thirdly, and maybe this should have been the first one, can I afford it? Our financial investments are limited by the size of our bank account. And likewise, our emotional capacity is limited, guys.
Mm-hmm. And we don't like that. Our ego doesn't like that.
No.
Ego doesn't like to hear that I can't fix everything. I can't do everything. I can't be there.
Sure,
I can. Yeah. Another thing we may consider in this example is, are there areas that I am emotionally invested in that I need to just cut my losses and get out? Are there things and people in my life that literally suck the joy of life out of me? I mean, you guys were talking about that phone call. You're talking about people and things that I dread to have to encounter because I know it will leave me emotionally bankrupt.
Is it possible that a whole lot of our emotional attachment and investment is just serving our ego? You know, feeding the perception and image of myself as the fixer, the person with all the answers to life's problems, the person who people can come to and depend on to solve their problems? Yes.
And another question is, are there people who are willing to exploit my ego to get me to make an emotional investment in them or their cause or situation? And again, I really go back to social media on that.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I've even seen people go as far as posting images of their children and, well, we're not going to have a very good Christmas this year or things like that. And it's hard because you want to fix it and you get emotionally invested in those things.
What example did Jesus set for us in all this? After all, he constantly encountered people and situations that called for him to get involved. Yet, just how did he manage his involvement? Perhaps the real question before us is, did Jesus operate utilizing unconditional love, or did he emotionally invest himself in every person he encountered?
Well, let's consult a single event that may hold the answer. Luke 17:11-19 reads as follows. As Jesus continued on toward Jerusalem, he reached the border between Galilee and Samaria. As he entered a village there, 10 lepers stood at a distance, crying out, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." Jesus looked at them and said, "Go show yourselves to the priests." As they went, they were cleansed of their leprosy. One of them, when he saw that he was healed, came back to Jesus, shouting, "Praise God." He fell to the ground at Jesus' feet, thanking him for what he had done. This man was a Samaritan. Jesus asked, "Didn't I heal 10 men? Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give glory to God except this foreigner?" And Jesus said to the man, "Stand up and go. Your faith has made you whole."
And since I'm a little bit backwards, let's work backwards.
Okay.
When Jesus said to the single Samaritan, "Your faith has made you whole," he used a Greek word for whole that is sozos, which has a somewhat mystical connotation. It means to be balanced, or some say in spiritual, emotional, mental, and physical harmony. Some versions read that Jesus said, "Your faith has healed you," which is not what Jesus said at all. They use this to suggest that the other 9 had their healing revoked, and there's no indication that this is true.
I've heard people use this and say, "Well, you know, the other 9, they got sick again. They ended up with leprosy again." Like, where did you read that? Well, because Jesus only told the one he was healed. He didn't say you're healed. He used a whole different concept. He said, he came back and gave, "And you're whole." Okay. With that settled, note that all 10 were physically healed of leprosy. The other 9 were just as physically healed as the 10th Samaritan that returned to give praise to God. He received sozos, or wholeness, from his unsolicited return, and I emphasize unsolicited, return and praise. Jesus didn't suggest any should return. He sent them to the temple priest for public verification of being free of the disease of leprosy. Jesus was not emotionally invested in these guys. Had he been, to protect his emotional investment, he would have revoked the healing of the other 9, or at least been tempted to. He healed them from a place of unjudgmental, unconditional love. He did it, and that would have been the end of the story with nothing more said had the 10th one not returned.
So the reality is, Jesus did not comment on the single return out of emotion. He purely made a very exposing observation. Notice he said, "Weren't there 10 of these guys?" And noted that only this foreigner returned to give glory to God, indicating that the other 9 were participants in the Jewish religion And shouldn't the practicing religious ones have been the first ones to give praise to God?
The bottom line is, Jesus didn't send anyone out to shadow these guys and see what they did with their new lease on life, how well they used it, or if they conformed to the right creed. Nor did he request that they return in a month or two and report how well they were using their blessing. Jesus did this miracle out of pure love and compassion, but without emotional attachment that would require him to keep tabs on the progress of his investment. In fact, this wasn't even an investment for him. Mm-mm. Jesus was presented with a need. He used the resources he had to meet the need. No follow-up necessary.
And that's really where we get into our ego and we get into the emotional investment when we think we need to keep tabs.
Yeah.
Need to keep tabs. One more thing to note. We may notice that when only one returned, Jesus didn't fall into a spiraling funk. He wasn't browbeating the nine that didn't return. He didn't beat up on the apostles. This is what's wrong with society. This is reason. And he didn't vow only to do good for those who would appreciate it in the future. Quite the opposite. Following his observation, as far as he was concerned, the event was done. It was out of mind. Jesus didn't get offended and wallow in self-pity because he had no emotional investment in the men or the situation. He did the right thing for the sake of doing the right thing. He walked away. He went on with life. Jesus did not change his attitude or his approach at all. He had no emotional investment and no ego at stake.
So the bottom line is, we must learn to stop emotionally attaching and investing ourselves in any and everything and everyone that beckons to suck us in emotionally. We may want to take stock of ourselves and see what unnecessary things we are invested in that is exhausting us emotionally and withdraw our investment. If it is our emotions that we consult and act upon and not objective logic, we can count on remaining stuck in a constant state of emotional exhaustion.
And until next time, may God's unconditional grace, peace, and love be on, in, and radiate out from each of you, our fellow seekers, from all of us here at God Beyond the Bible. Did you enjoy listening to God Beyond the Bible? Do you have an idea for an episode? Connect with us today. Visit our website at godbeyondthebible.com, all one word, or send us an email at email@godbeyondthebible.com, or you can visit us on Facebook. Just type God Beyond the Bible into the search bar.